This is the State of Things live from downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stacio. Many African Americans researching their family history hit a wall when they get to the 1860s or 1870s. During slavery, the only public records for enslaved people were deeds, which classify them as property and say nothing about their lived experiences. These documents can connect descendants to their ancestors and help communities reckon with their past. UNC Greensboro's project People Not Property, Slave Deeds of North Carolina, is working to digitize all public records of enslaved people across the state. The project is a collaboration among several institutions, including North Carolina Central University and North Carolina A&T State University. Students from some of these schools have traveled to eastern North Carolina this summer to dig up slave deeds in local courthouses and share their research with the community. Arwin Smallwood is part of the trip. He's a professor and chair of the Department of History and Political Science at North Carolina A&T, and he joins us now. Arwin, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit more about this project and the records themselves. Are they all the same? Are they lots of different forms, hard to find?
Well, they will vary based on the different areas they're located in, but generally speaking, they're the same in the sense of what they capture. The names of the slaves, usually the sexes, the ages, any other descriptions in terms of whether they're seamstresses or carpenters or, you know, whatever skill sets they might possess. So you do actually get a good amount of information about the slaves. And it's consistent with a public record in any of the counties, North Carolina's 100 counties.
You can, I think, right away see the value of a project like this, and we'll talk in greater depth about the value and the ripples and the way it ripples out into a community. But if we stick with that idea of this deed having this kind of data on it, and when you're talking about a human person, I would think at some point it becomes difficult to look at this stuff.
And it does for the, I have students with me today and they can kind of speak to their experiences, but a lot of the people who have been involved with the project, particularly registers of deeds or who have been assisting people, been assisting the registers of deeds, it can be very overwhelming emotionally. But the point I've made to those folks that I've interacted with is that they have to understand that this is one of the few ways that, you know, African Americans can actually find out more about their ancestors. And so even if what they are reading and transcribing is disturbing to them, they really have to, you know, preserve it, you know, because that's just one of the ways we can go further back in time. And just as a footnote, slave deeds really go all the way back in time. They go back to the 1600s, even when North Carolina was a part of Virginia.
All right. So, well, tell us about the trip this summer that you and your students took to eastern North Carolina.
Well, this was part of a grant that was funded at UNCG and part of this collaboration in which the students got the opportunity to travel to the region and actually see the region. Oftentimes when we do history, you know, it's from the archives and you don't actually physically get the opportunity to go to the region and go to the area and see, this region. And experiencing particularly eastern North Carolina where slavery began in our state, you know, it was the northeastern part of the state is populated at first, and then people move pretty much from northeast to southeast and from east to west. So if you're a native North Carolinian, if you trace your ancestry back to this state for hundreds of years, you began in the east, and then you moved from east to west. So to see that region and see that landscape and see the Albemarle Sound, the Chowan, Roanoke Rivers, you know, the Pamlico, to get an understanding of the waterways of our state and how the state developed and evolved and how commerce and trade and the people were brought into the state, I think is quite important. And then when you tie into that the slave deeds and you get to see how important slaves were to the society, I think that's very, you know, very important.
Well, I'm talking to Arwin Smallwood, who is a professor and chair of the Department of History and Political Science at North Carolina A&T. I want to bring in two students who went to eastern North Carolina to learn more about these records. Joanna Martinez and Deshaun Elam are here, third-year history students at North Carolina A&T, and they're with me now. Deshaun, tell us what it was like for you to go on this trip and see these documents firsthand.
It was really kind of inspiring in a lot of aspects. I've always been somebody who really loves the whole physical history. Kind of see what I can do to, you know, better my community as well and the people I know closest to me. So just to go on that go to Eastern Carolina with all the colleagues and professors really, I learned a lot, and it really opened my horizons.
Well, Joanna, you know, Arwin was talking about the seeing the physical landscape, things that you've read about in books, and now you're there. Did that sort of change things for you or open you to a different way of understanding your history?
It definitely did. This was my first time going to Eastern North Carolina, and something that Dr. Smallwood pointed out to me that really stuck to me was that we would look at the farmlands, and, you know, it's just like big lands, open lands with a lot of crops. And Dr. Smallwood mentioned that prior to all the crops being there, there was trees. It was covered in trees, and they had to come down. And people who did that were the enslaved people, whether they were Native Americans or African Americans. And from that day, like, that just stuck with me because I never saw it as that. And visiting Eastern North Carolina, it was really beautiful. Just rural towns and the more populated areas as well were just beautiful.
Yeah, I guess that's it. Arwin Smallwood, the idea of you talked about the fact that Eastern North Carolina was the first settled, but it also had these open lands. So that's where we had larger plantations, because North Carolina didn't have quite as many plantations as other southern states. But when we did, that's where they were, the northern and eastern tiers, right?
That is correct. I mean, one of the great things about that region and why it's really has been preserved for such a long time is the waterways, right, and the Outer Banks. It was very difficult for North Carolinians to have deep water ports to really ship large amounts of goods out. And so Virginia kind of had a stranglehold. And then when South Carolina evolved down in Charleston, they both prospered, and North Carolina kind of stagnated. But still, the landscape had to be prepared. So you had to clear the forest to introduce tobacco. And of course, the wars with native peoples pushed them off of some of the more fertile and drier lands in the coastal plains. And it began to see North Carolina evolve. But it's a very unique and very interesting landscape. And again, I'm biased. I'm from the region, so I think it's a very beautiful landscape. But all of North Carolina, of course, is beautiful as well.
Deshaun, you also got involved in community conversations around this. It wasn't just you taking the work, mining it, and bringing it home. Mm-hmm. You were sharing it with the people in whose communities you found this. What was that like for you? What kind of conversations did you have?
I felt like it really gave me a sense of how important community was, going to these different areas. You kind of think that there's not really a genuine interest for history as much anymore. But like when you go into these communities and you're talking to these people and they're telling you that, you know, they lived here all their life and they still don't know who, like, they can't go beyond their great grandparents. You know, it really motivates you to try to get, like, to not only do this, like, to digitize these files and find these slave deeds, but also it just really emphasizes how important one's community really is, which is something, honestly, I never really thought about until I really had this experience. So
I wonder what it's like, too. Again, we talked about that double-edged sword, and Arwin Smallwood, I'll start with you and maybe go around the table. On the one hand, this is a connection to my family. We've been here for a couple of generations, several, and now you've shown me this thing. On the other hand, you know, sort of what this document is, you know, and sort of having to confront all of that. What's it like to be in a room full of people who may be looking at these deeds for the first time?
Well, in our case, of course, there were professors and students, mm-hmm. and the students, of course, knew why they were there. And we had students from UNCG as well as from ANT. And so students knew why they were participating. And again, I'll let the students speak to their own personal experiences. Right. But I think that, history is painful. Many aspects of our history, world history, is painful. And certainly African American history is painful. And the notion of slavery or Native Americans, I mean, and what has happened to people, you know, the inhumanity of man to man or humans. But I think the overarching thing for us was that we would be doing something that was going to be positive for people who are descended of these folks, and dispel myths about slaves and slavery, the notion that slaves were just beasts of burden and they didn't have, you know, personalities, they didn't have skill sets, when in fact we know that they did. In fact, they built most of the plantation houses. Mm-hmm. Not only did they clear the land, and I tell my students all the time that there's nothing to be ashamed of in terms of your enslaved ancestors, because they built the state of North Carolina. Mm-hmm. They built the South. I mean, they cleared the land so that they could produce these cash crops. And then they maintained those plantations in terms of roofers, blacksmiths, you know, brick masons, just go down the list, seamstresses. They did everything for the slaveholders. So it's about confronting our past and then understanding that, yes, that is a painful past, but you can't have reconciliation. You can't move forward until both parties acknowledge the hurt and the wrong and what took place. If one person is ready to reconcile, but the other person says, well, I didn't do anything wrong, then you don't have reconciliation. You have to face, you know, the realities and the truth.
And of course, you're talking about a hurt and a pain that took place over a certain period of time. But Joanna, I wonder, because you talked about looking at this landscape, trying to imagine it now with trees, then trying to imagine the human labor that went into clearing that. And now you can imagine the value that it created for this land, and who has the value and who maintains the wealth even today, based on the labor that was done unpaid back then. So I'm wondering if your sense of this being only history was another revelation to you, that this is not in the past at all. It's very much with us.
Right. To me, I definitely don't see it as just in the past. Even me being a Latina, I'm Mexican. So I can see like some similarities of like immigrant families and like the difference between, some people have said like, oh, they're like the modern enslaved people just because they're like paid low wages and their conditions. So my experience is way different, especially visiting and looking at the slave deeds. All of my family history, like, it goes back to Mexico. So when I got back home from the trip, like, I showed my parents, like, I saw a slave deed where a boy of 2 years old was sold for $71. And so that just, it definitely shocked me. So this trip has definitely changed my perspective, and I grew very knowledgeable more on the topic of slavery here in North Carolina. And another unique difference that I noticed was like when we visited plantations on the trip, on the plantation sites, the like historians that were like walking us through, they were speaking more about the enslaved people, the slaves. But when we went to New Bern and we visited the governor's mansion in New Bern, they were only talking about the governor and his families, but they weren't talking about like the people who did the labor work there, like the enslaved. So I could see a lot of differences even now and today.
So you had a sense of the story that's being left out.
Yeah.
And again, without this kind of immersion, you wouldn't know that. You don't know what you don't know until you immerse yourself.
Right.
And hear the stories that are left out. What's the, for you, Deshaun, again, your understanding of history, you're somebody who, you took a history class, you must be interested, but now you've done this, and I wonder about your views on history and its relevance to today.
Yeah, I always loved history since I was a kid, so, you know, it's always been a passion of mine. And I kind of came into doing this, you know, I kind of came in here knowing that it was, like, deeper than just history, you know, but even with that, I kind of didn't realize how intricate the process of slave deeds were, and just how, like, they kind of, you know, they kind of, like, dehumanize, they really, like, dehumanized these people, and they were actual people, and that's the thing that kept on messing with me. Like, these are actual, like, living people who have lived, like, breathing hearts, and just like you and me, you know, and they were just, they're just, like, being sold like they're, you know, like, cattle or, like, they're just a property item, you know. So it reinforced not only my beliefs about how important history is and to not only my race and Black people, but everybody, but also reinforced, like, my will to kind of, like, always be thinking about that, you know, always be thinking about, you know, all the things that happened in the past to get me to where I am personally now. And I felt like that's really actually made my mindset, like, a lot better and more, you know, plentiful, I guess.
Yeah, no, I can understand that. Arwin Smallwood, again, we think about the banality of evil, right? And I think something Deshaun just pointed to, this is a very, very involved, costly structure. We've got courts, we've got registrars, we have a deed, it's the template is made up, it's very well thought out, it's extremely well executed by people who are doing their job every single day. So it's built into the structure, and it's a fine network of very well thought out activity that is dedicated to pure evil. I mean, so when you think that through, I mean, I'm very serious about that. That's the banality of evil, is it not? It's a deed. What could be more boring? We're going to have a guy come on and talk on our show about deeds, you know, and you think, could that possibly be interesting? And so there's nothing less interesting than a deed, and yet when you think about the impact. So when it gets embedded that deep into your social and economic fabric, it's worth thinking about. I wonder about the other side of that, too, is that it might be difficult for the families of slave owners. Sure. What about those communities? And again, sort of how do we cope with this as those of us in white communities who have, all of us in white communities, who are the beneficiaries of this unpaid labor? I am a beneficiary of this unpaid labor. I was born up north. I'm still the beneficiary of this. Well, what do we do?
Well, I think the first thing is that we have to accept this plain truth, right? And I've mentioned this, I've given talks in Asheboro and different places around the state, and I pointed out, if I took your wages and you had to work for me for no wages, and you had to do that for your entire life, and not just you, but your children and your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren, would I or do I owe you anything? Do I owe you anything? So we have to take a real look at this, you know, I mean, on both sides of it. You have to think about that. And then when you think about wealth, I came here most directly from the University of Memphis, and I'm fond of saying in the University of Memphis, in Memphis, Tennessee, two of the wealthiest people there are Pitt Hyde, who is the founder of AutoZone, and Fred Smith, who is the founder of FedEx. Well, the Smiths and the Hydes come from North Carolina, right? And they moved out west with the Cotton Kingdom, right? They're two of the wealthiest and most powerful people in Tennessee. Where did that wealth come from? They were both, their families were slave-owning families. They were part of the Cotton Kingdom, and from North Carolina, their ancestors would have been part of tobacco. So if I have nothing to invest in FedEx, and you have $500,000 to invest in FedEx, or $10,000 to invest in FedEx, then where are you today, and where am I? So those are just kind of the realities of it beyond, you know, it's just a truth. It doesn't make it right or wrong. I try to be neutral and try to be a historian because I want to educate, right? You have to accept a truth. There has to be a universal truth. And once you accept the universal truth, from there you can begin the process of sorting out, you know, the emotion and where you stand on this issue. But there are truths.
Right, and you plan to expand this project, is that right?
Yeah, the nature of the project was always we would start with 26 counties in North Carolina. The grant that UNCG received would start with 26 counties and ultimately expand to all 100 counties in North Carolina, and then ultimately, hopefully, the South, you know, the various slaveholding states in the South. So it has the potential. And again, if you know the history of the South and the history of migration, even I was just explaining about Tennessee, most of the families in West Tennessee came from Eastern North Carolina, and most of the families, of course, in East Tennessee came from Western North Carolina. So the South moves from east to west, from the Atlantic down into the deep South, Alabama, Mississippi, Texas, you know, Arkansas. And so you see these relationships, even if we talk about Bentonville, Arkansas, and, you know, so you can go down the list, right? So it's really, you can really trace these families, these slaves, and their ancestors through these deeds all the way back to Virginia and back to South Carolina. So there is a record of the Afro-American experience that goes back before 1860, when we start having recorded census records, 1870, when we start having census records and marriage licenses and death certificates and whatnot. You can actually tell a story and really see what these people went through prior to that if you use these slave deeds.
Arwin Smallwood, a professor and chair of the Department of History and Political Science at North Carolina A&T, Joanna Martinez, and Deshaun Elam, third-year history students, thank you so much for being here today. Just ahead, we talk about a novel exploring insiders and outsiders in North Carolina, but first, the music of Brianna Tam.